I'll be discussing my master's work at Penn State, looking at the effects of Trinexapac ethyl applications and cultivation on the divot resistance of Kentucky bluegrass cultivars. Now, when we think of a divot, we typically think of what we see in a golf course. However, divots do occur on athletic fields, and they can be problematic if excessive. We can define a divot as a piece of turf partially or completely gouged out of surrounding turf by studded footwear. Now, any athletic field or football field specifically can be prone to divoting. However, sand-based fields tend to be more prone to divoting than soil-based fields. We build our professional stadium and college stadium fields out of sand, primarily because they drain well and also because they maintain aeration under compaction. However, the trade-off is a loss in surface stability. A soil-based field has more fine particles, such as silts and clays, that creates a cohesive unit. Sand's single-grain structure does not allow for those cohesive forces, so we see a potential for reduced surface stability. And when we have reduced surface stability, we have a problem of excessive divoting, and that can lead to a number of problems, including poor footing. For example, if a player is running, goes to make a cut, slips and falls, that field is not providing the stability necessary for that sporting activity, so we can say the field has a reduced playing quality. Another problem associated with excessive divoting could be an increased injury risk. Again, if that same player is running, goes to make a cut, slips and falls, his body is not doing what he expects it to do, so we have the potential for ligament strains or muscle strains. So we can see that divoting is a major stress on athletic fields and specifically football fields. We tend to concentrate on compaction and abrasion or wear as the main stresses on football fields, but I think we also need to focus on divoting. Some previous research has looked at ways to increase the divot resistance on sand-based fields. These primarily focus on synthetic fiber reinforcements. So these are mixed into the root zone many times at time of construction, and many of these products have been shown to increase divot resistance. However, there are several drawbacks associated with these products. Again, they must be installed during field construction, so this isn't really going to help us for existing fields, and also they can be expensive. So we wanted to explore ways that we can increase the divot resistance of existing fields, either through maintenance practices or by changing plant growth, such as using plant growth regulators, such as Trinexapac ethyl. So the objectives of this study were to determine the effects of Trinexapac ethyl applications and springtime cultivation on divot resistance, and also to evaluate the divot resistance of various Kentucky bluegrass cultivars. So Trinexapac ethyl, or TE as I'll refer to it as, is a plant growth regulator commonly used on turf, sold as Primo Max in the turf market. And the way it works is it inhibits gibberellin production late in the biosynthetic pathway. And what that means is gibberellins are plant hormones involved in cell elongation and enlargement. What this chemical does is it inhibits the biosynthesis of that plant hormone, so we get smaller, more compact cells in the plant, in essence creating a miniature plant. There are several widely reported effects of TE on turf grass, and they include generally a 40-50% reduction in turf grass clipping yield. Also, darker green color is commonly reported. But from an athletic field perspective, what we're interested in is increased tiller production as well as changes in the rooting of the plant. So for this study, our TE applications went out at a labeled rate typical for Kentucky bluegrass grown under athletic field conditions. We sprayed our treatments on 28-day intervals in order to maintain growth regulation between treatments. And we looked at two application regimes, both beginning in May, one ending with its final application in July, which coincided with the simulated traffic period, which I'll talk about in a few moments. And the other began in May and had its final application in October. In these plots, the turf was under growth regulation for the entire simulated traffic period. Our other applied treatment, as I'll refer to them as in addition to our TE treatments, was a springtime cultivation treatment. This consisted of a combination of vertical mowing and core cultivation. Now, with this vertical mowing, we're going below the soil surface in an attempt to sever existing rhizomes and stimulate additional rhizome growth. And through our core cultivation, we're trying to create voids in the soil into which roots can grow into. So the idea behind this treatment is we're trying to stimulate root and rhizome growth. This is a practice that has been used on Penn State's Beaver Stadium in the past, and we wanted to include it in our trial to determine its effects on divot resistance. So our springtime cultivation treatment in this trial was done in early May. Again, it was that deep vertical mowing, so we're trying to sever existing rhizomes to stimulate new growth. A core cultivation is a typical core cultivation commonly used by field managers as part of an organic matter program, organic matter removal program. And following this treatment, we top dressed the entire plot with a layer of sand as part of a normal maintenance practice to control thatch and also to smooth the surface. The plot area in this study consisted of 9 Kentucky bluegrass cultivars, which were established in 2001. So these are mature stands of Kentucky bluegrass. And included in these cultivars are many commonly used on football fields, such as Limousine, P105, and Touchdown. The plot area was on a USGA spec root zone, so this is a sand-based root zone. Turf was maintained at a 3.2 centimeter mowing height, and the experimental design was a strip split plot design with 3 replications. This is what the plot area looked like. Inside this yellow box would be 1 cultivar and 1 replication. Between the red lines would be our applied treatment, so again our TE applications, our cultivation, and also our control. Then splitting the plots across in the other direction would be 3 traffic levels. So we have 12 subplots in this unit. This unit is repeated a total of 9 times per replication, so we have a grand total of 324 individual subplots. For our traffic simulation, we use the Brinkman Traffic Simulator. We applied our traffic from late July through mid-November, and the reason we chose this timing was because we wanted to coincide with the normal football season. By late July, preseason practice or training camps are beginning, and by mid-November, the college football season is winding down, and we're well into the second half of the NFL season. We looked at 3 traffic levels in the study, no traffic, medium traffic, and high traffic, and this is what the plot areas looked like following our final traffic application. Our high traffic plots, as you can see, had the least turf grass ground cover. What we're trying to simulate here is the area between the hash marks of a typical football field. Our medium traffic is more symbolic of the area around the numbers of a football field, and finally our no traffic plots are more symbolic of the end zone areas or the sideline areas. We evaluated various parameters in this study, including divot resistance, turf grass ground cover on a weekly basis, tiller density, below ground biomass, meaning roots and rhizomes, and also shear resistance. But for the purposes of today's discussion, I will focus on divot resistance. So for our divot resistance evaluation, we use the divot device you see pictured here. It consists of a weighted pendulum and a golf club head attached, and that's resting on the turf here in this picture. And the way this works is we pick up that shaft that contains the golf club head until it's horizontal with the ground, release it, and allow that weight to drive the club through the soil to create a divot. We created our divots in mid-November. We took 2 divots per subplot for a grand total of 648 total divots. And then we went through and measured divot length, width, and depth. And as you can imagine, using this machine, divot width is primarily controlled by the width of that golf club head. And divot depth is also something we can control with these metal pads you see resting on the ground here, in order to make sure that that club doesn't get stuck in the ground if it goes too deep. We also don't want it to go too shallow and just scuff the top of the turf. So while we measured all 3 dimensions, we'll really focus on divot length for our divot resistance evaluation. This is just another picture as that club is getting ready to impact the ground. Again, we measured all 3 dimensions, but we'll focus on divot length. So looking at our 2006 divot resistance results, this is based on 1 year's worth of data. Our second year of data will be coming in the next few weeks. And we'll focus on divot length again, as I said, and we can see significant main effects from cultivar, treatment, again those are our TE treatments and our cultivation, and also traffic level. We do not see any interactions among the main effects. So we'll begin by looking at our traffic level results. These are across all cultivars and all applied treatments. Focusing on divot length, we see that the no traffic plots had the shortest divots, which is to be expected. These plots had 100% turf grass ground cover. And we see a trend that as we increase traffic level, we see larger divots. Moving on to our divot resistance results for cultivars, keep in mind this is across all traffic levels and all applied treatments. Focusing on divot length, we see a range of approximately 7 centimeters from our most divot resistant cultivar to our least divot resistant cultivar. And also keep in mind that the smaller the number on this table indicates smaller divot, which indicates the most divot resistant cultivar. So in this table, the cultivars that are listed on the top of the table are the most divot resistant, and on the bottom of the table are the least divot resistant. And finally, looking at our applied treatments, this is across all cultivars and all traffic levels. Again, our treatments are that Trinexapac ethyl applied May through July, compared to Trinexapac ethyl applied May through October. Our cultivation treatment is that deep vertical mowing and core cultivation. And comparing that to our control, we see that both TE treatments significantly reduce divot length compared to the control. with our most effective treatment being TE applied May through July, where we saw approximately a 20% reduction in divot length. Looking at our cultivation treatment, it was not statistically different from the control. However, we do see a trend towards increasing or decreasing divot size or increasing divot resistance. So in conclusion, we see that divot resistance did vary among cultivars. We saw that range of approximately 7 centimeters from our most divot resistant cultivar to our least divot resistant cultivar. Our springtime cultivation was not statistically different from the control. However, we did see that trend towards increasing divot resistance. But the main thing we found was that both Trinexapac ethyl treatment regimes did increase divot resistance, with that most effective treatment being TE applied May through July. And I think this is something that field managers can use as part of their typical maintenance program. For instance, if they have a football field, it's not being used in the spring and first half of the summer, following their normal springtime maintenance practices, they can come through with a series of TE applications in order to, in essence, precondition the field for play. During this time, we can build up tiller density and increase rooting, but then allow the turf to resume normal growth once play begins. This will allow the turf to grow out of any damage incurred during the playing season. So future research, again, as I said, we have our second year of data coming in the next few weeks. We also want to look at the effects of these treatments on turf grass grown on a silt loam soil. Now, we know sand-based fields tend to be more prone to divoting than soil-based fields. However, divots can occur on these fields. So will these effects from these treatments be the same, will they be muted, or will they disappear completely? And this is a trial that we currently have on the ground, and our first year of data will be coming again in the next few weeks. We also want to look at the influence of Trinexapac ethyl applications on the divot resistance of other species commonly grown in athletic fields, such as perennial ryegrass and Bermuda grass. And finally, what are the effects of other plant growth regulators, such as paclobutrazol? Will the effects be the same as Trinexapac ethyl? Will it be better, or will it not be as effective as Trinexapac ethyl? With that, I'd like to thank Dr. Jim Brosnan and Diane Petrunic for their help with data collection, and also like to thank my thesis committee. And with that, I'll take any questions that you may have. The question is, if the traffic passes were all done in one event, they were spread over 3 days during the week, so generally on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. Yes?
What's the likelihood that when you stop spraying in July, what you observed was a rebound effect from the PGR as opposed to keeping the primo going and through the season and really not experiencing that rebound? Or I guess the better question is,
the question is, if we saw a rebound effect in that May through July, we did see a slight rebound effect. It did not last that long. And really, when we took our divots, this was 3 months after our final Trinexapac ethyl application on that May through July treatment. So I don't think the rebound effect really comes into play when we took our divots.
You didn't talk about it today, you didn't have time to do it. How about the repair of these divots? What's that related to?
The question is the repair of the divots. We did not look at divot recovery, generally because these divots are occurring so late in the year. We really don't have much chance of recovery from mid-November on in a cool season environment.